Wicked is a phenomenally successful 2003 musical with music and lyrics by Stephen Schwartz and a book by Winnie Holzman. It was based on the novel Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West, which itself was inspired by the witches in the classic book and movie The Wizard of Oz. It centers around the relationship between the witches Alphaba and Glinda, almost entirely before the events of The Wizard of Oz begin. Wicked is the second highest grossing and the fifth longest running musical in Broadway history, with a host of awards and productions over the last 15 years and an upcoming movie adaptation. I have a very special guest today because I somehow convinced my mother, Anne, to be on the podcast. This is the season 2 finale of Corner of the Sky, so stay tuned at the end of the episode to hear what's next. I hope you enjoy our conversation about Wicked. I have a very special guest here with me today. Would you like to say hello?
Hello.
So if that sounds kind of like me, that would not be surprising because it's my mom. My mom agreed to be on the podcast.
I don't know what I was thinking.
My mom agreed to be on the podcast like 6 months ago when it seemed like a very not real thing, I think.
So I am the one who is responsible for this incredibly wonderful, intelligent, talented woman sitting in front of this microphone to talk about her favorite things.
I gave her $20 to say that.
And I spent it well.
So today we're going to be talking about the musical Wicked, and there is a specific reason that we've chosen this musical for us. So would you like to tell this story?
So many, many years ago when I had three small children, I made them watch all kinds of musicals on television, and we watched the Tonys every year, and I really got them into musical theater, I believe I did. And the Tonys the year before, it was 2008, they featured the show In the Heights. That was a brand new show, and we saw some other ones, and my husband and I knew we were going to go to New York the next year on their spring break in April. So we started talking about what kind of show would you like to see, and do you want to go see a show? Because we live in Maine. New York is not exactly around the corner from us, so this was going to be something special. So the three kids, and at the time, I believe they were 13, 11, and 9, I guess, when we talked about it, sat down and tried to decide what shows they wanted. And I gave them a couple of options, and Wicked was one of them. And finally, I think it was Riley, my youngest, turned to us and said, "Which one do you think is more likely to close soonest?"
We're clever.
And we laughed. And I said, "Well, to be honest, based on reviews and longevity of what the programs are, Wicked, I think, is going to be around for a long time. And I'm not sure about In the Heights." So they decided they wanted to see In the Heights, which I thought was a pretty intelligent decision on their part. So we bought them tickets to In the Heights for the matinee in April of 2009.
And then, so we're in New York City for the day. It was the first time that the kids had been in New York. We go to see In the Heights. We have a great time. And then we were at dinner at some kind of just random New York City diner. And I specifically remember this moment where Mom was like, "Okay, so do you guys want to do something else? Are you tired and you want to go home?" Because we were staying with some family nearby. And we were like, "Well, we're kind of tired. Maybe we want to go home." And then she goes, "Okay, do you want to hear what your other option is, though?" And we're like, "Okay." And then she pulls out tickets to Wicked.
Wisely, they chose to go to Wicked instead of going home.
Yeah, and that was the day we learned the lesson that if there are two options, you pick the one that Mom wants less, because then you might get both.
I did mention they're smart, right?
And it really was a great day, though, because In the Heights is an awesome musical, and Wicked is a beautiful musical, and it was an... I can tell it's not surprising to find out where I come from that I'm like, "Oh, I want to make a whole podcast just talking about different musicals and how much I love them." Like, I came by it honestly.
And to be completely honest, by the time we saw both of them, I mean, I loved Wicked, but I think I liked In the Heights better. I think the kids chose well.
It was a really good show. But today, that's not really a good start for this episode.
No.
But today, we are talking about Wicked, because again, even if we maybe liked In the Heights better that day, it still is an incredible musical. It's one of the longest running musicals of all time. It's got a beautiful story. It's got one of, if not the most iconic musical songs of all time. So there's a lot to talk about here.
Yay.
So of course, we're going to start off with the basic concept of Wicked, which if you're not familiar with it, it is a musical based on a book, based on a movie, based on a book. I think that's the whole progression.
Which I think I've seen and read all of those.
I think I have all except for the Wicked book, but we'll come back to that in a sec. But Wicked is the story of the two witches of Oz that are featured in The Wizard of Oz. Classic book, classic movie, and, you know, the whole story of The Wizard of Oz is the Wicked Witch of the West, and Dorothy's whole quest is to defeat her and get back the ruby slippers, and she talks to the Good Witch of the North. Well, this is a story of the Good Witch of the North and the Wicked Witch of the West, and how they became known as those names, because, spoiler alert, they were roommates back in college. And so it starts with that concept. It starts with them when they hate each other, actually. But that's the basic concept of the show, and it tells the story. I think the tagline is, "So much happened before Dorothy dropped in." So it's all of the background story. So you have read, like, all of the iterations of this story, right?
Yeah, but a long time ago. When you asked me to do this musical, I had to think hard. I saw the show, Wicked, and then I wanted to go back. I always like to read the source material for things I watch. Even if I see a movie, I'll go read the book. And in this case, I did not feel the book was better.
Yeah, as I understand, I've never actually read the book. I actually have it on my bookshelf, and I've never gotten around to reading it, partially because you said you didn't like it that much. But it is very different from the musical, right?
It's very dark. It's very nasty, kind of. It's, I don't want to say that the musical's light and fluffy, but it's more uplifting, and it's got a great message, and things are, there. It's a happy ending, whereas the book is not.
Yeah, I can understand why they might have wanted to lighten it up for Broadway a little bit. And I also, I've heard the story about how in production they chose to focus it more on just the story of Elphaba and Glinda, which is the Wicked Witch and the Good Witch, being the centerpiece of the entire story, whereas the book had more with Fiero, which is the love interest. Mm-hmm.
And Fiero was married in the book.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
He was married and had kids.
Scandalous.
For a kid, and he was cheating.
With both of them?
I don't remember him with Glinda in the book. I just remember him with Elphaba. But I know that the musical was written with Kristen Chenoweth in mind for Glinda, so I wonder how much of... Because the book is basically Elphaba, but the musical was written with Kristen Chenoweth in mind, and I wonder if they expanded Elphaba's part in the musical if they hadn't intended to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that happens not infrequently, is when you see actors take on the parts, and especially I think the chemistry between Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel, who played Elphaba, was so good that they were like, oh, okay, this is going to be the show. This is going to be the whole thing.
Well, again, I don't know that because Idina Menzel didn't play the part in the tryouts.
Oh, yeah.
In the out of towns. So I don't know. But it works.
Maybe they just really like Kristen Chenoweth, which, you know, fair.
And maybe this is the way it was intended to be. I don't have that knowledge. It was just something I was thinking about.
Do you not have Stephen Schwartz on speed dial, Mom?
I do not. I wish I did. Wouldn't that be lovely?
That would be cool. I would have him on this show for sure.
He would have a restraining order on me by now.
Well, with Stephen Schwartz, though, I mean, so he used the composer Brigid, which, I mean, is probably his most popular show. It is incredibly successful. But he also did Pippin and Godspell. So he's not exactly a one-hit wonder.
No.
But he actually did not win the Tony for Wicked, because Wicked did win a few Tonys, including Idina Menzel won for Best Actress, but, they lost the book, score, and Best Musical to Avenue Q.
Well, that one's pretty good too.
Yeah, I've never actually seen Avenue Q, but I just think that's funny. I mean, like, clearly they're both very popular musicals, but one is still running and one isn't.
That's because one's rated R and one's not.
Also a good point. Maybe if they kept the original version of Wicked, it would also be off-Broadway by now.
Well, I know I wouldn't have taken you guys.
That's a very good point. Gotta stay kid-friendly.
Well, I particularly liked it for young girls. You know, there's not a lot out there for young girls as good role models and lessons to learn. And yeah, I took you guys to see, I know your brother, your poor brother got dragged along, but that's why I wanted to go.
That's really sweet. I've never heard you say it like that before.
Oh, you didn't know that?
Not particularly, no.
Oh, no, that's why.
That's really cool. Because the heart of this story, like, is these two women, Alphaba and Glinda, and they have a tumultuous relationship, I would say.
As do you and your sister.
Yeah. my sister and I have never sung a duet about how much we hate each other.
Oh, no, you sing that duet all the time.
No, that's true.
That was one of the best things in the world, because you knew the soundtrack before we went to see the show. You knew every word of that soundtrack. And it was nothing to be driving in the car with you and have one word or a look, and suddenly the two of you were singing how much you loathe each other, or you start popular, and you knew which side you were, and you took turns, and it was a total duet. It was great.
Oh, yeah, this was a real thing. When we were kids, is we would have Broadway musicals, and then we would all, or musicals in general, and just pick parts, and then we all knew our parts, and so we could play the songs and sing them through, and it was, yes.
So I had two young blonde women sitting in the back seat of my car who, depending on how they were feeling about each other, when they got to the song What a Feeling and the line about being blonde, they traded off.
Unusually and exceedingly peculiar and altogether quite impossible to describe.
Blonde.
You just gotta take turns sometimes.
Apparently you two didn't know how to do that.
I think What Is This Feeling might be my favorite song from Wicked. I say that with lots of question marks at the end, because it is truly just so much fun, and it is very easy and fun to sing with another person, which is one, maybe my favorite marker of what makes a good musical theater song.
And if you had asked me that 10 years ago, I would have agreed with you that that was my favorite song. But I have changed my mind as I get older and wiser and look at things with a little more discerning lens as an adult looking back. But now I like For Good.
As it passes a sun, like a stream that meets a boulder halfway through the wood. Who can say if I've been changed?
For Good is my other daughter Riley's favorite song from Wicked, to the point where when she graduated from high school last year, she made the class video and she snuck that song in. So in the middle of all of these top 10 pop songs talking about leaving school and being friends forever, she snuck in For Good. And if you looked at the faces around the auditorium, they're kind of like, what is this? And we were just laughing because we knew exactly what it was. But if you listen to the words, it was perfect.
Well, it absolutely fits. And I mean, that's not the first time that song has been used in that context, I think. But it's not the most common ever.
And I don't think it was used in your high school.
Yeah.
Very small high school, no drama department.
It is funny how that's basically the entire character progression of Alphaba and Glinda. Is their first song together is What Is This Feeling? Their last song together is For Good. And one is about how much they hate each other, and one's about how much they love each other. And character development.
Exactly.
Yeah. I still like What Is This Feeling?
No, I like it. What's not to like? It's great. And it summarizes their characters beautifully, as told by the other person.
Oh, yeah. We actually, we were singing songs in my show choir the other day with, like, just a mini concert for just us. And two people were singing What Is This Feeling? And they were like, can you guys be the other students? And we were like, yes, we can. And so they may have been meant only three or four of us, but basically the entire group got up there. And when it got to the part where a bunch of the other students come out to support Glinda in this, or Galinda as she was known at that time, the other students at their, I'm not actually sure if it's high school or college or what, but at their school come out to support Galinda because they are all bullying Alphaba basically. We got a little bit too into it. There may have been some overacting on our knees with, like, large expressive gestures.
As there should be.
You raise me.
But that's when they sing that song to each other, they summarize each other very well. And when you get to the blonde, usually all I can think of is, yeah, she's not wrong.
That one word can encapsulate
it. Does
so much.
It does so well. But that used to bother you because you were blonde.
Yeah, I come to embrace it.
Well, now you're pink. Which also fits.
Speaking of pink, there's also the song Popular. Which, I mean, if we're going to do points of their relationship, Popular is the turning point when Galinda, who has been feuding with Alphaba, decides that she's going to be her friend and that she's going to make her popular, because that's what Galinda values over everything else.
Be popular. You're gonna be popular. I'll teach you the proper poise when you talk to boys. Little ways to flirt and glance. Ooh, I'll show you what shoes to wear.
And so she sings this primarily solo song that is, I believe one of the lines is, there were so many good ones and I was hoping one would spring to mind, but I got lost.
So what you don't know is, as Quinn is trying to remember the lyric to this song, her sister Riley is in the background singing it. If we turn the mics up a little, you might be able to hear her.
Or we could not.
Yeah, let's not.
But there's a line in Popular at the beginning when she sings, "Whenever I see someone less fortunate than I," and let's face it, who isn't less fortunate than I? And that's just a perfect encapsulation of what Galinda's character is. Even as she's turning around to do something nice for someone else, she can't help mentioning that she is, in fact, still the best.
But she also talks about how doing something nice for somebody else is the nice thing to do.
She's got layers.
They're shallow, but they're layers.
She's got about two of them, but they're there.
But that song looks like so much fun. You can tell whoever's playing Galinda is having a ball.
There's also a really wonderful series of videos that make montages of beautiful theater fails. And one of them features when, I think it's a Broadway performance, there's a moment where Galinda takes a flower and pins it in Alphaba's hair. And she goes to do it and it just won't. It just won't. It gets to the point where the actress who's playing Galinda is like climbing on top of Alphaba. Because of course they're leading into the comedy of it because it's a funny song. But she just cannot get this thing in her hair. So eventually she just gives up and pins it on her dress and the whole audience claps. It's wonderful.
I remember watching clips of this and getting very panicked because at one point Galinda puts her hands on Alphaba's arms. And I'm like, the makeup, the makeup. But that stuff stays. That's good stuff.
I don't even think we ever said this explicitly, but Alphaba's green.
Because she's the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yes. That's the whole thing. And this is, I mean, coming back to a major theme of the story, is this is kind of the whole thing, that Alphaba is born green, and you find out kind of later in the story why this might be. And so she is discriminated against her whole life, and people treat her like a freak, and they call her names and won't be her friend.
Because we're completely unfamiliar with people that do that to other people who are different.
Yeah, we're going to come back to the Star Trek phenomena of this writing in a moment. But and so while this is the story of this, like, this platonic love story between two women, and like their friendship, it's also set on the backdrop of like political corruption and upheaval and discrimination and this nation state of Oz and who is ruled by.
Down with the patriarchy.
Yeah, basically.
I learned that from Quinn.
But it's a story that uses fantastical elements to talk about familiar things like discrimination. And I referenced Star Trek because this is the thing that Star Trek was famous for, is talking about real world current issues through alien species.
Hoorah.
Thank you. So the whole overarching story is about the Wizard of Oz, who we're off to see the wizard, that one, because Alphaba is revealed to have magical powers, and no one's really quite sure where they came from because she's especially gifted, but magic is a thing that exists in this world, and so she ends up being taken under the wing of someone at the school to learn spellcasting and perhaps one day to meet the wizard.
But when she and Glinda become friends, Glinda becomes trained as well. And so they are both basically in magic school at this point.
It's Hogwarts.
It's Hogwarts, but green. And then near the end of Act One, they are indeed off to see the wizard.
You've been dying to say that, haven't you?
I've been waiting this whole time. But another aspect of this magical world is that they are these anthropomorphic animals. And so they walk and talk just like humans and wear clothes and all of that, but they're goats and stuff. And so one of them, there is a goat teacher in the school who tells Elphaba that something bad is happening in Oz. I resisted the urge to sing that line.
He has a song. Think about a goat and the word bad.
And so when Elphaba and Glinda go off to meet the wizard, they discover something pretty terrible, which is that something bad that's been happening to the animals in Oz is a deliberate action taken by the wizard. Because as taken directly from the lore of the Wizard of Oz, like, this is a man from our Earth who has come into the world of Oz, but he doesn't understand the way the magic works there, and he doesn't like the fact that the animals can talk. And so he's actively trying to stop them from talking and to revert them back into Earth-like animals. And so that's the system that we're left with in this world, is these questions of discrimination, both against Elphaba for literally her skin color, but also against, like, these animals and the way that one man's fear of the unknown has affected this entire universe. And our heroines are left with the question of what are they going to do about it?
Ooh, that's deep.
Thank you. Stephen Schwartz came up with that. Actually, probably the book writer came up with that of the original book.
I don't remember. I'm pretty sure that was in there. I don't remember. Oh, yeah, I was, because the goat. Well, I don't want to give spoilers.
Yeah.
Okay. What happens in the musical to the goat teacher is a lot worse in the book.
Yeah, I was reading about that on the Wikipedia page.
Wikipedia is your friend, as long as your English teacher approves. And she won't. Well, on that note, that's one of the character development. I think the most character development in the show is actually Glinda, who turns into Glinda by the end, because she starts as a fatuous blonde who only cares about parties and her looks, and gets dragged into this with Elphaba and learns about it and does not approve and tries to help. And her journey of self-actualization is an interesting and fascinating journey.
I guess that brings us to this point when the question is first posed to both women, as they have now become friends, they've gone on this student journey together, they have been faced with this question of their choices are basically to accept what the wizard is doing and to be taken in as his students to achieve something that they've both declared is what they want, especially Elphaba. She had a whole song about it. This is a musical. Or to reject his ideas and therefore reject society and the good graces of the wizard who rules this entire land. And that brings us to Defying Gravity. So what do you think of the song Defying Gravity?
Honestly?
Yeah, for sure.
I remember thinking it was a little overdone. No, it's fun to watch. It's a beautiful song, and it's sung extraordinarily well by every Elphaba I've ever heard. It's a lot of fun to watch the girls as she rises in the air for this. That was pretty cool. I do find a little big. It's a little bit overblown, I guess, for my taste, for where the placement of it was in the movie. Musical. But it definitely served its purpose. It was her anthem. She was out of there and she was going to do what she wanted to do. What did you think of it, Quinn?
I mean, it's a beautiful song. And, like, they don't give Elphaba to people who can't kill Defying Gravity, because that's her whole thing. But I think it almost suffers from the top 40 problem, which is that it's so popular that it becomes a cliche, it becomes overdone, and so it's hard to judge the song even on its own merit because it is, you've heard it so many times that...
I'm sorry. On that note, I have to tell you, I was watching a show from MTV that was on last summer called Sweet Vicious, and it was a show about something that doesn't really matter. But the two female main characters could not be more different. They were pretty much like Elphaba and Galinda, and they had just done something really bad, and they got in a car, and they're a little shell-shocked, and they don't really know what to do, and nobody's talking. And the one girl says to the other, do you mind if I put on some music? And the other one says, yeah. And this is a punk rock emo, you know, you really think she's going to... Anyway, they ended up putting on Defying Gravity. And you get the first bar, and then the next thing you know, the other one starts singing. And before long, they are both belting out Defying Gravity. And it is a truly glorious scene.
Okay, that's worth the whole thing, though.
That was great. So sometimes commercialism is good.
But yeah, that is it's everywhere. And I mean, it's everywhere because it's a really good song, but it's very much, and like, we have to mention Frozen because Idina Menzel also stars in Frozen, and she sings Let It Go, which is very similar to Defying Gravity in so many ways. And both of them are so overplayed everywhere. And in the performance itself, I thought that when we went to see it, and I went to see Wicked again a couple years ago, actually, not with mom, sorry.
Sigh.
And so that time when I was older, I thought that it was good, like absolutely, and the actress did an amazing job, but it's so overhyped. Like, it's one of those things you have to dial your expectations back a little bit, which is impossible to do because it's Defying Gravity.
Sometimes you can Google Defying Gravity on YouTube. Everybody from the original Fiero, Norbert Leo Butz, to your plumber is on there singing Defying Gravity.
That does become a problem with a lot of really popular musical theater stuff. I think especially because musical theater tends to be a fairly self-contained thing. And so when something breaks out of that... not that people are snobby about it, although some people are snobby about it, but for the most part, it's just the sense of like, oh, like everyone knows that. It's been played a million times and I'm tired of it. And I really, as a musical theater fan, love having my niche thing that is special to me, and it becomes less special because it goes mainstream and everyone's kind of like, oh, okay.
I think this is the most I've ever analyzed any musical I've ever seen because I just go to enjoy them. I don't want to pick them apart. And it's probably the only part of my life I don't.
That's so pure.
But it's true. I mean, I pick apart a book. I pick apart movies. Maybe it's because I spend too much money on the tickets. I don't know. But when I go, I just like it or I don't.
That's really fair, too. And I think that especially, I think that I'm a lot more critical. I mean, obviously, like, this show is designed around talking about a musical for an hour, and so we get in a lot deeper than I would in a normal conversation. Believe it or not, I'm not like this 100% of the time.
95.
Yeah, okay. I am your daughter. But I think that I will be more critical if I'm watching a musical, like a musical movie or a filmed version, or if I'm just listening to the soundtrack, versus if I go to see something live, especially if it's a Broadway production, then even if it wasn't my favorite show ever, I'm probably still going to be like, that was great. I had a great time. I may not listen to it again. I'm thinking of a specific show, but I don't want to say it. But I still don't regret going. Whereas with kind of like a movie or a book, there's so much less investment, and there's so much less, it's also so much less investment on their side as well, because with live theater, like, they are putting on that show for you, whereas the movie is going out to everyone the same.
There's another good point in there. I don't live anywhere near New York, so a lot of the shows that I've seen have been regional theater or a traveling company. And I grew up in Philadelphia, so I have seen a few Broadway shows, but those were as kids and I moved away. So when we went back down to see these two shows, the experience of walking into a theater that was built and designed for that show is immensely different than when you walk into the Civic Center and they're going to put on Wicked. They're going to have, you know, half the props, or, I mean, they're going to try and they do a great job. But when you walk into the Wicked Theater in Broadway and you walk in the front door and the map's on the wall and the staircase is green or whatever, I mean, it's been a while, but I remember thinking, this is what it's like when you have the entire theater designed around that show. You know, the investment starts from the marquee walking in the door.
I think the two factors of, one, the overwhelming investment that theater requires to make from Broadway to your tiniest community production, and also the factor of, like, I'm someone who spends a lot of time online, and I'm more and more attuned to different theater communities, especially younger theater communities, and there tends to be this very... there's a strong attitude of, like, if something goes mainstream or popular outside of a specific community, then there's definitely an element of, like, oh, I'm better than those other people because I know more shows than just Hamilton and Wicked. And
I wish I knew Hamilton. If anyone out there is listening and has an extra ticket, I would love to take anyone to go see Hamilton.
Anyway... And so I feel like I just so desperately never want to be like that, even though I'm an innately petty person. But
don't sell yourself short. You're lovely.
Thank you.
Do not say that about my daughter.
I'm an internally petty person.
Well, you don't have to tell people.
But with theater in particular, because it's, first of all, so wonderful and so much heart has to go in every little thing that happens in theater, I don't like feeling like I'm the person who's down on something because it's popular, but there is a real effect of just, like, oversaturation for anything.
Not for Hamilton.
Except for Hamilton. I will listen to Hamilton forever.
The lottery is really big right now, and we were all sitting around trying to decide what we would do with that much money, and all Quinn decided was how many times she could see Hamilton.
So many times. I would buy Hamilton if I won the lottery.
I approve.
To circle back around and kind of end with what we started with, the heart of the show, our relationship between Alphaba and Galinda. You were talking before about how this show is special because it has two complex, positive depictions of women that aren't dependent on their relationship with a man.
Well, particularly with musicals, because I grew up with Singing in the Rain and Seven Brides for Seven Brothers and Gigi, and all the women want to do is find a guy. And hey, I love a good romantic story. I really, really love them. But I was raising daughters, and I didn't want them to think that the be all and end all of their existence was. So the idea of a story where two women become friends and the reason they are friends are valid and they have an entire existence outside of male influence was appealing to me. And nowadays they have something called the Bechdel test, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, where it passes if two female main characters have a conversation that does not involve a man, and you get extra points if the characters have names. That's how bad our world is. So anyway, having this show where they are positive, they have a lot of character development, a lot of layers, they're good and bad in both of them. They genuinely like each other, and the guy's kind of an afterthought was cool and didn't do any harm to let my son watch it too.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a romantic storyline in Wicked, and both female leads are interested in the same man, Fiera, which becomes an interesting subplot, but that really is the subplot. It is not the primary relationship of the show. And while it has some driving of the plot, their individual motivations are really what drives the whole thing forward. They kind of steamroll him into a relationship in the first place. He doesn't have a lot of agency.
No, he just wants to have a good time. I will admit I am enough of a romantic, and I do enjoy my romances, that if they had not ended up together, and I won't say with who, I would have been upset. I do like a happy ending with a couple. But it doesn't have to be the main story.
No, I think they did that very well. And they also developed Fiero as a character very well. I mean, he starts as this, he literally sings about how all he wants to do is party and dance through life. And
don't we all?
Don't we all?
No, I'm serious. Don't we all?
And at the end, just like how Glinda starts like as a very shallow character, or apparently shallow character, and is given much greater depth and character growth, Fiero goes through a really similar process.
Boys take longer.
Alphaba's just kind of mad the whole time, which, fair.
She had reason to be.
Oh, yeah, no, that's fair is non-sarcastic. She had every right to be pretty mad.
Yeah, I'd be a lot more mad if I were her.
Yeah. Alphaba's development is a lot more subtle because she's shown as a good person at the beginning. And so her development is more about her learning what rules should be followed, what is the right thing versus what someone is telling you to do, what can you sacrifice, what should you sacrifice. It's a lot more complicated questions.
One drawback, though, in the character development is she's one of those characters that comes out that is innately good, and I haven't figured out why. Because she did not have warm, supportive parents. She did not have a great home life, and she'd been tortured and teased her entire life by other children.
She's the miracle hero.
She really is.
I will say, reflecting on the whole show and, I mean, the great songs we talked about, and there's so many songs that we didn't talk about, like, the soundtrack of this musical is genuinely great and everyone should listen to it. But I think that... Sorry.
I was going to say frequently.
Frequently, yes.
Many times.
But I think my favorite part really is how complicated our main characters are in a way that I think... I mean, obviously there's only so much you can do in a musical. But I think that a lot of times you have more surface level characters, or like people embody one particular trait or have one character arc and that's all that there's time for. Whereas here we get like two and a half with Fiero, like fully fleshed out people that go on complicated arcs, which is not that common.
I like the musical. I enjoyed the story, but I got to admit, if a show doesn't have comedy, I'm not on board with it at all. And this one did. And it had a couple of little cute throwaway scenes that I love. There's one where Dorothy makes an appearance. But it's not a real appearance. It's just a throwaway little scene. And if you didn't quite realize what was happening, you might have missed it. And it made me laugh out loud. So they had a lot of throwaway visual during popular. There was a lot of visual humor. But I've got to be able to laugh at a show.
Oh, yeah. Wicked goes to some pretty serious dark places, but also has very wonderful lighthearted comedy in a lot of it. Especially with Glinda and her bubble.
Yes, we love Glinda.
We can't all come and go by bubble.
We're not as fortunate as she.
There's so much more that we could talk about with this musical. We haven't even touched on several of the main characters, but we're getting near the end. And I did want to talk about the upcoming movie adaptation.
They got me. I went on YouTube to look for some clips to remind myself about some things. And I kept seeing Wicked movie trailer and I would get all excited and I click on it and it's somebody's idea of what should be in the Wicked movie. And they got me on the first one. I thought they had cast Zac Efron and I was a little excited about that. No, they did not. This was some rotten person. It took me a little longer than it should have to figure out. I think it was wishful thinking, but anyway, what do you know?
Yeah, they haven't announced any of the casting for the Wicked movie yet, but of course people have their dream casts. But they have announced a date. As of now, they are planning on releasing the movie on December 20th, 2019. So, you know, about 2 years from now.
What about Aaron Tveit as Fiero?
Yeah, so this is what I want to talk about.
Can we start a campaign?
Who do we want to play these characters? Because Aaron Tveit played Fiero at some point. He's a little old now, but I think he could do it. Because I think he could do anything.
He did Danny in Grease.
Yeah, true. Well, that was a little more leeway, though. Because I feel like when you're in live theater, there's a lot more leeway on characters' ages. Because, I mean, like, that's how it works. And you're farther away and it's fine. And I think that Grease Live was kind of somewhere in the middle there. Because it was live theater, even though it was televised. But I'm not sure if he could get away with playing someone who I think is supposed to be like 25.
The kid in Miscast, he might not be old enough yet. I can't remember his name.
Wait, who are you?
The ones who did the Skylar sisters.
Aren't they like 12?
Yeah, but if it's a couple years from now, they might hit puberty. If they set it in high school.
Well, I'm not sure if they're going to set like the school again. I'm still unclear if it's high school or college that they're supposed to be in, but if they set
finishing school,
What does that mean?
I don't know. I made that up.
But I would assume, since so much happens with them in school, that they would set it as a college setting and then they would have the same actors play the whole thing. That would probably make the most sense.
So we might not even know who they get because they might not be big yet.
That's true. They could pick up-and-comers, but they would want to aim for people who are in their early 20s or look like they could be in their early 20s 2 years from now.
Or we could just do the entire cast of Rent.
Yeah.
They're used to playing younger.
Well, that was a question, is like, oh, would Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth come back to play the roles? And like, this show premiered in like 2003. They are now much older than they were when they first played the characters, but they're also so beloved as these characters and have done great things with their career since. So I don't think that it is 100% off the table from what I was reading. But I don't know who I'd want to play Alphaba and Glinda. I would be behind Zac Efron as Fiero, I think. He's really good.
Most of the stars I'm familiar with at this point are too old. They really are. I don't know too many, unless like Philippa Sue. She's early 20s, I think.
Yeah, she looks really young.
But she's the only one I can think of in the right age bracket that I've heard of. I know there's a whole lot of talented people out there we haven't seen.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, I would love to see them do up-and-coming people for these roles. Although I think that probably at least one of them will be a big star because they're going to want to have that draw for such a big project.
But that's exactly what I don't want. Unless they get somebody like Idina Menzel to play Madame Morrible.
Oh my God, yes.
But other than that, I don't like it when they take the Broadway show, film it, and throw a star, a TV or movie star in there, and not the Broadway vets that made it famous in the first place. And I know Broadway's different from film. I understand that. But there's an awful lot of talented people that could make that switch easily.
No, my personal pet peeve is when you have movie musicals and you cast LA people who have either never done a musical before, have done very few, instead of casting out of New York City and like the people who are actually on Broadway and who can actually sing.
Okay, there's one person that I think might be able to pull off Galinda that is a star. Kristen Bell.
Yeah.
She definitely can sing. She's cute, petite, and blonde. And she doesn't look old.
And, you know, she was in Frozen, so she's halfway there.
Yeah. But I mean, seriously, I think she could actually do it. I'm trying to think of other people that I know. Like, Minnie Driver can sing, but she's too old. Emma Rossum definitely can sing, but wrong for the part. I'm trying to think of TV stars now.
And I mean, there are plenty of people in Hollywood who can sing really well or who have done Broadway and film. And like, I know, I just am still mad about La La Land.
Really a terrible film.
Controversial opinion.
We were very unhappy.
Here's the thing. I've since listened to covers of that music. It's good music. You just wouldn't know.
And I know those people can sing too. Anyway. How about Neil Patrick Harris as the Wizard?
Ooh, I could see that one. I just saw an ad for him coming back as Olaf in A Series of Unfortunate Events. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's not the same character, but I feel like it's a similar vibe in a lot of ways.
Well, since it was originally Joel Grey, I think they're physically, they got the same hair.
I guess we'll just have to leave our dream cast for Wicked to the people who are actually casting it.
Novel idea. They'll get it wrong. They should have asked us.
Yeah, of course. Now, are you ready for our wrap-up lightning round?
I am mildly prepared for the lightning round.
Mom is very prepared for the lightning round.
Mom is terrified.
Now, as always, we've covered some of these before, so this will be a little bit of easy questions as well. Your favorite song?
For Good.
Favorite line?
Blonde.
Your favorite character?
Galinda.
Who would you recommend go see this show or listen to it?
Everybody.
Well, okay. But besides everyone, do you have any one specific?
That haven't already seen it? I wouldn't mind taking my mother. Oh, it's definitely a family friendly. I would take kids. This would be a good one for their first exposure to Broadway. There's a little bit of scary, a lot of fun, good messages, strong characters. So definitely family friendly. Get your toes in, get your kids hooked.
If you could be in this show, which character would you want to be?
I don't remember this on my prep sheet. who would I be? Like, this is assuming I could sing.
Yeah, assuming you were Broadway's then best actress.
I want to ride in the bubble. I want to be Galinda.
There we go. And finally, if you could combine Wicked with another musical, which would it be and why?
Well, I think for similarity of tone and character development, I would have to go with Legally Blonde.
And why Legally Blonde?
I think I just covered that. No, because the main characters in both are strong women who are blonde, who start feeling their conflict may start arising through a influence of a male. And then they develop beyond that and recognize in themselves their strengths and their what they have to give. And they actually bond with other females in spite of the male.
Yay for female friendship. And Laura Bel Bundy, who is Elle from Legally Blonde in the original Broadway cast, was the original Broadway understudy for Galinda. So there you go.
There's only so many blondes in Hollywood. Did you know that?
They all go for the same roles. Thanks so much for joining me today.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.
Can you untie me from the chair now, please?
Thank you for listening to this episode and to all of Season 2. We are going on hiatus until Spring 2019. Now is the time for you to send in your requests. What shows do you want us to cover? What guests do you want to hear or hear again? Let us know on Twitter at COTS Podcast. We'd also appreciate it so much if you could review us in the Apple Podcast Store. One last thing. For members of the Incomparable Network, there will be one more episode of Corner of the Sky this season. Our special ensemble episode about the musical television series Smash is going up in 2 weeks over on the members feed. If you'd like to hear that episode and learn more about membership, you can go to theincomparable.com/members. Thank you again for all your support, and we'll be back soon.
Don't ever let me listen to this.